This is a podcast that seeks justice. Justice for the lives stolen by those in society that hide amongst us every day. Hidden in our towns, cities, and countrysides, the places that we work, and sometimes in our very own homes. This is Hidden Killers.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Today we're joined by Mark Pucci, retired NYPD detective and founder and CEO of the National Institute for Law and Justice, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose sole mission is to provide investigative services to victims, victims' families, who are victims of homicides, abductions, and missing, murdered Indigenous men, women, and children, and cannot afford to pay for the services themselves at zero cost to the families. I want to thank you, Mark, for joining us. I want to get your insight into the Koberger case and talk about some of the insight that you may have that uniquely would be observed by detectives and not necessarily us on the outside, and some of the techniques that are going on, zeroing in on confirming alleged killer Brian Koberger is in fact the perpetrator of these crimes.
Okay, great. So what I mean, just in my personal, you know, experiences, you know, as a detective in NYPD, what I love is, you know, and say even more in the most recent past, is the convergence of what I would call, you know, old school shoe leather, you know, detective work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, coupling that together seamlessly with the modern technology, which, you know, virtually priceless, you know, in, as you had just mentioned, you know, literally confirming or closing that, you know, the definition of, you know, guilty or, you know, allegedly guilty or probable cause.
Sure.
you know, especially with DNA, you know, where it's 100 million to one or, you know, whatever percentage they're going to assign in these individual cases. But what really, you know, caught my attention, you know, and gave me that warm, fuzzy feeling was, you know, one of the most traditional and probably obscure techniques that has been used, you know, probably since before, you know, electricity was, you know, widely available,
yeah,
is what we call a garbage pull. Okay, so, and, you know, even more so in the past where, you know, people wouldn't have shredders or they weren't concerned about identity theft and other, you know, other things, you know, where they might more destroy, you know, certain things that they're going to throw in the garbage. That's always been a tried and true kind of, you know, off the radar technique by, you know, seasoned detectives. You know, I've myself have used it, you know, innumerable times, and the amount of information that you can elicit from that, you know, but in this case in particular, what they were looking for was, you know, with the, you know, the one sample of DNA that they had recovered, you know, from the snap on the sheath for the knife. With the advent of familial DNA, once they, you know, felt that they had identified him, they were zeroing in on all of the other technologies, you know, cell phone pings on the towers, the vehicle, you know, and other, you know, general evidence. They requested in that the Pennsylvania police do garbage pulls in order to try to acquire items so that they could, through familial DNA, get a match with Brian Koberger. And they were successful with that, with a sample of DNA that they were, I believe they were able to identify as paternal with his father. Mm-hmm. Then the other coordination with that, which I know in the recent past, I believe the FBI is denying, you know, saying that it was just a rumor or it's not accurate, that they had requested that the Indiana State Police and the Hancock County Sheriff's Department effected two car stops,
yeah,
in order to obtain, you know, with specific requests to obtain body cam video of Brian Koberger's hands, which, you know, I would I think safely assume you know, in a frenzied, you know, type of multi, you know, stabbing event like that, between, you know, becoming exhausted, you know, the adrenaline dump, any resistance, there's always a great likelihood that the perpetrator is going to inadvertently, you know, injure themselves at the same time. So, you know, I would assume that they were looking at his hands to see or to confirm that he may have, you know, injured himself with the knife as well.
It's interesting. It's almost, it's old school techniques meeting new school techniques and them converging to help put the pieces of the puzzle together in a more definite way, really.
Yes. Yes. Very deliberate, you know, and the integration, you know, is, you know, it's really, really, really using, you know, as you said, the old school with the new school, and creating almost a perfect storm of, you know, empirical evidence.
Were you surprised at all that Koberger didn't prepare for a garbage pull to be done on him, considering his studies and what he was learning about? Or did he think he was just too smart to get caught?
You know, it's probably a little bit of both. You know, I mean, reading some things about, you know, some problems that he had. I know very recently, you know, a letter has been, you know, brought forward where I guess his advisor or his professor, which he was assisting, where he was having a lot of problems with the way that he was dealing with female students and possibly even female staff.
Yeah.
You know, you hate to say, but, you know, he may be the proverbial, you know, guy who thinks he's the smartest guy in the room,
yeah.
Which as a detective, we welcome that as our suspect, because he's going to inadvertently, you know, make mistakes.
Yeah, might be smart for only so long. There was frustration, exactly. And there still seems to be with the Gonzalez family hiring outside investigative help on this case. Walk me through how a family would come to you for outside help. What do you do differently than local or federal investigators at the National Institute for Law and Justice? And why would someone come to you?
So, I mean, that's a great question, and I appreciate you you asking me. So, first and foremost, as a retired detective, I have the utmost respect for any other law enforcement, you know, whether it's state, local, federal, that is conducting or has previously conducted the investigation. Our first interaction when the family comes to us is to really, really do an intensive review of all the known facts. So it could be a completed investigation where a conclusion has been made, or it can be, you know, an investigation where, similar to this, the families felt that law enforcement wasn't being transparent, which we understand that now, you know, in hindsight, because they were in the midst of conducting, you know, very intricate, you know, jurisdictional, you know, coordinated efforts in the investigation. So any leak at all would have been very detrimental to the case. You know, so it can be any congruence of reasons. You know, it's not moving at the speed which they wanted to. The conclusion isn't what they, you know, believe or hoped it would be. But again, the first thing we do is a very, very comprehensive review of all known facts. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the last thing you want to do in any of these, you know, potential cases or investigations is provide any false hope of any, you know, different conclusion, let's say.
Sure.
So with that, when in fact we do feel that, you know, there is something here, you know, maybe, you know, resources, whether it's, you know, a smaller department or manpower or, you know, in some major cities, the next shiny object has come along and, mm-hmm. you know, and now, you know, it's not a case garnering national or international attention. And we do, you know, advise the family that we will accept the case. First thing we do is interact directly with the law enforcement entity or entities advise them that we're there as an additional resource. We're absolutely not the competition. We're two parallel lines. Mm-hmm. And with our, say, national reach, you know, so we're not just using, you know, a potential forensics, you know, say company or municipality that's local. You know, we have the ability to bring in, you know, anyone national that may be the best fit for that, and would have the resources as well and the time to dedicate specifically and solely to that investigation. You know, we generally have a very, very, you know, open, welcoming rapport, because again, you know, we're not the competition, you know. Yeah. As I like to say, you know, unfortunately I don't have handcuffs anymore. So, you know, the law enforcement entity whose jurisdiction it is ultimately would have to, you know, make that arrest if and when we reach probable cause, or, you know, the judicial, you know, branch. Mm-hmm. would have to make the choice to prosecute. So we're absolutely just a partner organization in the private sector, and we move at the rate of private industry, which, you know, we know and assume is sometimes different than municipalities or,
sure,
you know, other court system.
Is there always more to be learned and more to be discovered in a case, or are there times where law enforcement truly, they've done everything that they possibly can? They're doing more behind the scenes than families even know. But understandably, the family is going through trauma and extreme sorrow and pain, and they just want more and more answers. But sometimes there just isn't more to be found in some cases.
Yes, exactly. And that's, you know, what I had referenced earlier with our extensive review. You know, and sometimes we'll come back to a family and we'll say, listen, you know, we feel that the, you know, the conclusion or our outcome will be the same, but we understand that, let's say, the last 10 days of your loved one's life are a mystery. So we can offer that, you know, maybe we can put together more of a comprehensive timeline, which might not be the focus of, you know, the, say, like the prior law enforcement agency.
Sure.
In the determination. You know, let's say, God forbid, it was a suicide. You know, once that determination is there, there's really no reason for, you know, say, you know, like a county sheriff's office to go and then try to inform the family that, you know, this was the downslide that your loved one experienced over the last 10 or 12 days. Mm-hmm. But that's essential to the families and the loved ones in their own ability to accept what has happened and then begin the healing process, and, you know, hopefully eventually have, you know, closure and peace with it. So we can you know, also offer that, you know, where it wouldn't really even fall under, you know, a law enforcement, yeah, you know, auspice. But to answer your question, there's many cases where everything has been done that can possibly be done. You know, every witness, every lead, mm-hmm, you know, has been, you know, fully explored and vetted. And sometimes just having us come in, you know, and actually confirm that,
yeah,
you know, but, you know, say, sit down across a kitchen table and explain it, you know, heart to heart, you know, looking each other in the eye and, you know, yeah, holding the, you know, the family member's hand, you know, goes a long way, you know, more on a personal level.
Mark Pucci, thank you for your insight into the case against Brian Koberger. Very much appreciated. If you like the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on this case. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us.